Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another great episode we have here of Suspense Radio on this Friday night, September the 10th. So glad you all could join us, because I'm telling you what, we have a fabulous show for you tonight. We got best-selling authors Brett Battles and William Kent Kruger on, and it's going to be a fabulous show. Also, since I'm flying solo tonight, I'm not going to have a SmackDown going on. I'm just going to have more time for the authors to talk and let them go ahead and, you know, talk about their books and what they're doing and upcoming and everything else. And, you know, we're going to get into some book reviews. And so we got a lot of electric stuff to come on, because you know what happens now for the next 60 minutes. Suspense Radio. Sit back, relax. Here we go. Well, you're talking to thriller writers, you definitely have to turn up the heat, so there's nothing a little bit wrong with AC/DC there, starting it off on a great Friday night that we have here for you. And again, I want to thank everybody, especially all of our guests that we've have come on the show, and I want to especially go back and thank on our Tuesday show, because we had a great show for you on Tuesday. One of the authors, Richard Deutsch, was not able to call in on that show. We had a little bit of problems with them calling in, but Jillian Hoffman and her book, Pretty Little Things, was absolutely amazing to hear about that and everything that she had going on. But we were able to reschedule Richard for September 21st, which is a good thing. So he's going to be on September 21st. And just to give you a little bit here, the September lineup that we have for you is just off the charts. Not starting with tonight with Brett Battles and William Kruger. Coming up on the show for September, you're going to hear authors David Morrell, Karen Slaughter, Tess Gerritsen, Lisa Black, Alan Jacobson, Lisa Unger. So, I mean, it's going to be star-studded for September. October's the same way. We're going to have Erica Spindler on already, and, you know, there's going to be a lot of other great guests that we have coming up. An exciting announcement that we're not going to play yet until we get confirmation, but I will say that we have an author that's going to be coming up probably in January that is going to knock you off your seats. But again, I'm not going to tell you that right now, because I want to make sure I get confirmation. I just like to tease you. So you have to keep checking suspensemagazine.com/suspenseradio for that announcement, or you can find it out in the magazine, suspensemagazine.com. You can go and order the magazine. We'll announce it there, too, on our website, or Facebook and Twitter. You can find us all over. Our phone number tonight, if you'd like to call in, possibly, and talk to one of our guests, you can always call in at 877-666-9320. And Brett Battles is going to be our first guest coming up here in about 5 minutes. So you'll be able to come on, chat with him maybe, and ask a, you know, quick question and get like that. But if you want to get on the chat room, we have that available to you to ask some questions. I get on as many as I can, but, you know, not all the time, you know, can I? Because sometimes we just get on a roll, and, you know, when you get on a roll, you just can't stop. But I'm going to go ahead, and I'm going to give you a couple book reviews that we have going on here. And the first one is, it's the remake, not a remake, it's a reprint of his first book that he had out that he probably was not as well known at that time, of course, so they decided to reprint his book. And this is Hall and Coben. And on September 28th, they are going to bring back, after 15 years of out of print, his book, Play Dead. So you want to check out that for September 28th. If you know Hall and Coben, you definitely know that you have a thriller winner on your hands. And Play Dead was his first published work. Like I said, it's been out of print for 15 years. They're rebringing it back out here, and it's definitely something that you want to check out on September 28th. The other item that we have here is Diana Gabaldon has written a graphic novel. It's an Outlander graphic novel, and it's called The Exile, and it's experiencing Jamie's side of the story. So I'm not really familiar too much, but what we did is when we went through here, I mean, it's just an excellent hardcover graphic novel that, you know, you can get through if you're a fan of comic books or anything like that. It's just beautifully illustrated, perfectly well written. So it's definitely one that you want to go and check out. And this book comes out, I believe, September 21st. So that is going to be in hardcover. It's The Exile by Diane Gabaldon. So you want to check that one out. The other one here is a fascinating thing that we have coming out. They are rebringing back out the original horror classic Dracula by Bram Stoker. But that's not the exciting part, because the exciting part is that they have written a sequel to it. And the sequel was written by the great-grandnephew of Bram Stoker. And his first name, I believe, is Darcy. It's D-A-C-R-E Stoker. And also, it looks like it's been contributed by Ian Holt, who is a Dracula historian and screenwriter. And so this is called Dracula the Undead, and it's the sequel to the original classic. So if everybody has probably read, you know, a little bit of, or at least picked up or seen or whatever, the original Bram Stoker Dracula book. So now you have Dracula the Undead, the sequel to the original. And this book, again, is going to be out in paperback. They're bringing them both out at the same time. And, of course, they're going to be out before Halloween. So it's going to be out on October the 5th. So you definitely want to go, and if you are a Dracula fan, you definitely want to go and pick out Dracula the Undead by Darcy Stoker and Ian Holt, the sequel to the original one. And the reason why I'm doing that is because I wanted to kind of understand, you know, why would they go back and, you know, redo a sequel to a book that, you know, is probably, I mean, it's up there at the very top, if not one of the top three best-selling thriller books, horror, suspense, whatever category you want to put it in, of all time. You know, you have the Bram Stoker Award for, you know, the horror writers, and then they come back here with a sequel. And so they've tried this before in other realms. As J.R.R. Tolkien, I believe one of his, either his son or somebody, his nephew, had come back out and, you know, rewritten or picked up his notes and wrote some sort of the sequels or the prequels, I believe, to the Lord of the Rings series. And so I want the listeners to, you know, kind of let us know, you know, what do you think about that? Do you have a suggestion, maybe, you know, what book, you know, back when do you think would make a good sequel, or do you think they should put a prequel to, or things like that? Is it even a good idea? Because it might not even be a good idea. We just got this, you know, in the mail, so we haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I am going to read, because I am a Dracula fan, and I kind of want to see where they went with the story. Did they make it, you know, still back in that time? Have they updated it? You know, what have they done with Dracula? But at least the good thing is that, you know, it's still on the pages, and it's still very relevant. Now, our first guest that I want to bring on here, like I said, is Brett Battles. And Brett is the author of the Jonathan Quinn novels, and his latest book is called Shadow of Betrayal. This is the third book in the Jonathan Quinn series. And Brett has definitely been catching the eye of a lot of readers, because he has been, you know, racing up the charts, per se, if you want to put it that way, because his books have just gotten better and better, and Jonathan Quinn is one of the top, you know, thriller characters out there right now. So I want to bring Brett on. Brett, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. And I know that we missed you at Thriller Fest, which was a shame, but we would have loved to be able to meet you in person We saw that you were going to...
This was the first Thriller Fest that I actually didn't attend.
You weren't there.
I was not there. Yeah, it was the first time I wasn't able to make it. But
We were looking for you, and people were saying that you were there. So, yeah, so we really didn't miss you.
Liars. They were liars.
Maybe I saw, I think it was because I think I saw your name in the catalog or in the program, and so I was like, oh, Brett's going to be here. So we were kind of looking, and we didn't really make it on the Friday, and, we missed a lot of authors. But good, I'm glad we didn't miss you. But that's too bad you didn't go.
Well, I could tell you that I was there and that you did miss me, but that would make me one of those liars. But, maybe next year.
So let's talk a little bit here about Shadow of Betrayal and Jonathan Quinn.
First, I have a suggestion for a book that they should make a sequel to.
If you're gonna
like go complete sacrilege, you might as well go right to the top and make a prequel to The Great Gatsby, because I think it's a horrible idea. But go for it is what I say. I would never read that, and I would be really pissed if someone did that. But you know what? Go for it.
So I take it you're not a fan of them coming back with a sequel to Dracula then?
I don't know. I mean, I read Dracula 10, 15 years ago.
Right.
And, I'm sure it was wonderful at the time, but it doesn't,
right.
It's different than the way things are now. It's a very slow and plodding book, which was fine and very and mysterious in that way, but I'm not sure where they're going to go with the sequel. Obviously they went somewhere, but am I going to read it? Probably not.
Right, and that's the thing. Yeah, I mean, for its time, it was probably it was extremely eye catching, like Catcher in the Rye was. But now it'd be like yeah, big deal. So the guy is whatever. So I'm curious to know, but.
Yeah.
But let's jump back here. So with Jonathan Quinn and his third book, how has Jonathan kind of progressed in his life from the first book that you had him in The Cleaner until now through Deceived, which was number two, and now into Shadow of Betrayal?
Right. Well, Jonathan's definitely been having an arc happen in his, an overall series arc going on, which I've consciously been trying to develop. In The Cleaner, he's really a very solitary person in The Cleaner. Not that he isn't so solitary by the end of, through the next two books, but his family, if you will, is growing. I mean, he's coming to trust his apprentice Nate, and there are other issues there that complicate their relationship because of something that happens in The Deceived need to get worked out in Shadow of Betrayal. He has a growing relationship with his partner Orlando as she becomes more and more important in his life. He's kind of going from that solitary to trying to find a different place in life for him, and kind of building a world around him where he's not so alone all the time, I think.
So he's trying to get out of his shell, I guess, a little bit more. Is that what you're maybe trying to?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I do hesitate to say that he's trying to get out of his shell. I think he's getting out of his shell, whether he wants to or not. He had a long term unrequited feelings towards Orlando that finally were able to blossom, starting in The Deceived. So that's kind of brought him out and exposed him to a little bit more. But it's balancing this lifelong of solitariness that he's had with having these other people becoming part of his life more than just business partners, I guess. and the responsibility he feels towards them and everything. I mean, I don't hit it over the head with that in the books, but that's definitely one of the themes that's there.
And so why, in this book, why Ireland?
The beginning of the book, when it's the first scene with Quinn and Nate, or is
yeah.
it Ireland?
And it touched off in Ireland. I'm just curious to know, I like to kind of understand readers, because a lot of them maybe write about their hometown and this and that,
right.
And you don't sound Irish, so that's why
I
try to.
I mean, I am distantly, as all good Americans are, right?
Right.
No, that's not true. That is not true. We are all from everywhere.
But we all eat potatoes, so.
Well, there is that.
Yeah, there is that.
I actually tend to use places that I've been, and I have actually, you know, I've spent some time in Ireland, you know, several weeks, and there's the scene in Shadow Betrayal in Ireland is set in this abandoned church out in the middle of nowhere, and it's like you've got these walls of this church that are still a big stone church, but there's no roof on the church, and plants and everything are growing within inside where all the benches used to be, and there's a graveyard that's kind of overgrown and everything. I actually found that very church. And
wow.
When I went over there, it just happened to stop on the side of the road. My friend and I were just driving around, and we stopped on the side of the road one day, and we were just kind of, because we thought we saw something out off in the sun, we started wandering, and it was just this abandoned church out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, nobody else was around. It was just crazy. And I thought about that for years, and when I started writing this book, I was thinking, yeah, this would make a great location for a scene. And so that's how that happened.
That's really cool. It kind of reminds you a little bit of, if we ever seen, you know, like The Outsiders, just the church in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
Kind of like just overgrown, done, and it's not even. And did you ever go back and find out the history of the church? I mean, was it used?
Yeah.
How long ago was it used, or by who?
Never did. It was. We were. Right, as my friend Tom and I were. And actually, this was back in the early '90s. We were driving from, I think it was Waterford, down past Cork, but it was on the road between Waterford and Cork. Just off to the side, and we just saw it, and you know, we were in the middle of our drive, so we didn't stop anywhere to find anything else out about it. We just stopped there for a little bit and then continued on, you know, for a couple more hours going wherever it was we were going. But it was just, you know, the image of it stuck with me. That's the thing with a lot of the locations and the places I use, the image, if it's an image that sticks with me, it'll tend to find itself. It finds its way into a story. I don't necessarily need to know the history about it because I'm not going to, you know, share the history in there. For me, it's more the imagination of the place, often.
Right, kind of like the unknown.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, sometimes
yeah,
I like finding out the history of a place. I'm not, you know, completely shallow that way. But, you know, occasionally I just like to not know because it just makes it more mysterious to me.
Now, I want to take you back here a little bit further, because you wrote a story in an anthology that was edited by Lee Child called Killer Year. Now, how did that come about? Because it listed you as a debut author. So how did that come about?
Well, Killer Year was actually, before it was a book, it was an organ, it was a group. And what it was in 2007, there was a group of us who were all, well, actually it started in 2006, but in the year 2007, there was a group of us who were going to have our debut novels come out. And we were kind of all floundering, each of us doing little had our own little blogs going and whatnot. And we decided to kind of group together so that we could, like, use the force of many to raise our profile. And there were 13 of us. They included J.T. Ellison, Jason Pinter, Marcus Sakey, Sean Chercover, Robert Gregory Brown, Bill Cameron. I'm going to forget people.
I forget people all the time.
Yeah, and there, and my apologies to my friends who I have not mentioned. But anyway, we pulled together. We started blogs. We kind of really raised our awareness within the Thriller community. We hit Thriller Fest that year in 2006. Was our first kind of one that we were all together, and we actually made T-shirts, and we got a lot of the other authors interested in us, and this sparked us getting, each of us getting a what we called a mentor of some author that was well established. You know, Lee was JT's mentor, James Rollins was my mentor, Tess, I think, did Robert Gregory Baum, Tess Garrison, on and on and on. And what the mentors would do, they'd give us blurbs. If we had questions, we could ask them, and they'd help us out. And through the process, I think it was JT who came up with the idea of maybe, hey, why don't we see if we can pitch an anthology, and I'll ask, you know, one of our mentors if they can maybe go sort of sign on as editor and blah, blah, blah. And basically from there, we were able to sell the idea of an anthology to St. Martin's, with Lee's name attached, and presto bingo, we had that come out. I think that came out in January of 2008. So right after, so all of our first books had just come out, and then we had the anthology come out with all of our short stories. It was great. It was a great double punch.
That definitely sounds like J.T. Ellison. We had her on the show about a month ago, I guess, with author Stephen James. So yeah, she was great. So that definitely, she sounds like someone who was gonna, you know, kind of go out there and be the forefront to say, let's do this, let's get it done.
Right.
So that's, I mean, so that's great. I mean, now do you guys have any plans of doing this again, or was this just like a one-time shot?
No, it was a one-time thing for us. I mean, most of us are still in contact, and we have what I would call a special bond with each other. Many of us, because of what we've gone through, and, you know, when we see each other, we tend to hang out together and everything. This did, though, our idea was picked up by ITW, which is the International Thriller Writers Association, and they turned it into their debut authors program. So it does continue. I mean, that debut authors program that they have with ITW is an evolution of our Killer Year organization. But we were the first, we were the ones who did it that first year. As it sounds like I'm bragging and I'm putting a flag in the ground. We were the first.
I would. You are the founder of Killer Year. Are you kidding me? I would say that.
That's all. It just started there.
So the other, I'm on your website here, and I always like to know these questions because I always kind of find, you know, the little funny answers that maybe some authors give. But your tour for Shadow of Betrayal, which is, again, everybody, this is Brett Battles on the phone. We're talking about his Jonathan Quinn series, his latest book, Shadow of Betrayal. It's number 3 in the series. Deceived was number 2. The Cleaner was number 1. And so your launch party for Shadow of Betrayal started on July the 18th. And so my question is, when you go on tour, what's the funniest or the scariest thing that has happened to you, either by a fan or something that's just happened, like on tour, when you're going to these books?
Yeah, I have actually, you know, I've heard people ask that question before. I mean, other authors, and there's some great answers out there, and some people have some really, really funny stuff. I can honestly say that so far, I really haven't had anything that's too outlandish one way or the other. So whatever answer I gave would be relatively boring and uninteresting. Which is so not what I want to be.
No, and your books are so far from that, which is, you know, but yeah, that not everybody, you know, not everybody had that, you know, happen. I just thought maybe that you had something odd that went on.
Hopefully that'll happen. I mean, I semi-wish that I did, you know, but hopefully nothing too crazy, but just, you know, crazy enough where it makes a good story and nobody gets hurt.
That's fabulous. Well, I'll tell you, I'm going to go over here to a chat site because we have some fans on that want to ask a couple questions. So the first question is that if you couldn't be an author, what would you do?
Wow.
We're going into the deeps of the brain for this one.
Right. Well, I mean, the easy answer is that, for many years, I worked in television while I was trying to become an author. So I probably would, if I hadn't got published, I'd still be working. And my specific area was television graphics. The last job I had, I was an executive producer in the graphics department over at E! Entertainment Television, which is really just basically a glorified project manager. Not that there's anything wrong with project managers, but I wasn't the one actually creating the graphics. I was just making sure they got created and got to who they needed to.
Okay.
But I've been doing graphics, basically, that graphic roles for about 15, 20 years, and so I'd probably still be doing that, which would not have made me happy.
When you're talking about that, it just sounds like you're just like, it's just not going to make me happy.
A lot of people in the industry in that area, the job I had would have been, it was really a good job, and people would have seen it as a great career and everything. And unfortunately for me, it was more of a job because it was allowing me to do what I really loved, which was write, if I'm completely honest, what would I do if I hadn't have gotten into that and I hadn't gotten into writing? If I had been able to do it all over again except not go the writing route? I don't know. I mean, I've often said that I sometimes wish that I had gone to medical school and become like a doctor and been one of those, just a GP person, guy who's not necessarily working here, but would go work overseas and stuff like that, because I love travel. I love helping people, and that would be fun. That really sounds altruistic, and again, I'm making myself look great, even though without actually having done that.
And it's funny because you mentioned the medical field, and people have asked, and they're like, oh, would you ever want to be a doctor? And I'm like, no, I think I'd like to be a nurse, and I think I would want to work in the coma ward just because the patients don't yell at you, and they're always happy to see you. I'm like that. I go, so I think that's where I would probably, it would be nice and quiet. And guess what?
Right.
When they see you, they're happy to see you because they haven't seen anybody for 7 years. So I said, I think that's where I would want to work.
Right. See, I would want to be like, not necessarily Doctors Without Borders, but something, working in a clinic overseas somewhere where I could do a lot of help. Of course, that's not taking into the account of all the money it cost me to go to medical school so that I'd have to actually get a job over here that paid lots of money so I could pay that back and therefore not do what I really wanted to do. But that's really overthinking it right there.
Right. And Ricky, you've been to a bunch of places looking at your bio, so you've definitely probably seen a lot of the third world kind of countries that you could go over and help. So.
I love traveling.
Now I have a ton of questions on the chat, and I kind of read through them, and I'm going to ask this one here. Another one of your fans says, if you could start over, what would you do differently? And I guess that's like with any three of your books, maybe like with The Cleaner or something. Is there something that you would go back and maybe change?
There is one thing that comes to mind that I would change, and it's a little thing in The Cleaner, but it actually affects my next book, which comes out in March, called The Silenced. And I basically ignored the fact that I had it in The Cleaner, and most people won't even see it, but I know it because it was just really tiny, tiny little throwaway line that I wish I hadn't put in there. And I am not going to tell you what it is. I am just not going to do it.
So, Brett, speaking of your book coming out, what is the line that you were going to have in there that you don't have in there anymore?
I am not.
That was good. I just acted, just rolled with it, didn't I?
Right. Totally rolled with it.
So go ahead and tell us what's next for Jonathan and Brett.
All right. The next book comes out here in the States. I think it's March 22nd, and it's called The Silenced. And it is what I would conservatively say Quinn's most personal book. That you will learn a lot about Quinn's history in this book, and there are some stakes that get raised that he never, ever thought would get raised in his life. So it gets really dicey and really personal. I will say that as in with all the Quinn novels, there's a lot of interesting settings. It does have some settings in the States, but it also has a large portion of the book is set in London and Paris. So it's a lot of fun. Hopefully I say this about each of the books as they come out, but I think it's my favorite Quinn book to date once it comes out. Favorite one is Shadow of Betrayal.
without be my next question is that do you feel that with every book that you're just getting that much better and Jonathan's just getting that much more immersed in yourself?
I would phrase it as that I am hopefully getting better with each book. I am consciously trying with every book that I write to write a better book every single time I set out. I mean, that hopefully is the goal of every author. And, in theory, it should be happening that way because you learn, every book you write, you learn something. You learn, you make mistakes, you learn from those, you move forward, and you incorporate what you've learned into the next one, and into the next one, into the next one. And so hopefully I've been doing that. And I've also been able to be a little bit more cognizant of Quinn's arc and things happening to him and things happening to Orlando and Nate and everybody else in the book. In fact, when I wrote The Cleaner, I wasn't thinking series when I wrote it. It wasn't until I was like doing some rewrites and at the time I was in a writer's group and the head of the writer's group is the one, he suggested to me, he goes, this might make a good series. And I hadn't even considered it at that point. So I wasn't thinking in those terms with Quinn when I first set out to write his first book. But that stuff has kicked in, and so I think long term. Sometimes I'll say things in books knowing that because I've already I have an idea what the next book is. That's kind of seeding the next book, things like that. So hopefully I'm getting better.
Well, Brett, I'm going to tell you, it's been fabulous having you on, and boy, the time, I don't know where the time went. All of a sudden, I mean, it's just
already
gone.
I know,
I can't believe it. But everybody, we've been speaking here with Brett Battles. Go to his website, brettbattles.com. You'll be able to check out his bio, his books, information. He has blog, news. You definitely want to go out and get Shadow of Betrayal if you have not read any of his books, the Jonathan Quinn series. That's okay, because you can still get The Cleaner and Deceived and Shadow of Betrayal all together.
That's right. I also they're all available as audiobooks also. They're also available as ebooks. And if you want to find me, I also blog at murderaudi.com every other week on Thursdays, so that's someplace else you can find me.
So there you go. So brettbattles.com, murderaudi.com, and
ebook. Twitter, all those things.
All of them. And I'll tell you,
you just
might have opened the door. So if you message him, he will get back to you.
Answer every email. So.
He does. He answers every email. I can attest to that because he answered mine, which was great, which is why he's here. So, well, Brett, I'll tell you, thank you so much for coming on. It's been great. And, keep us up to date on what's going on. And we will definitely, be back in touch with when your next book comes out.
Sounds great. I look forward to it.
All right. Thanks a lot. Have a good one.
Thank you. You too.
So I'm going to segue right now into our next guest, William Kent Krueger, author of Vermilion Drift, except I'm going to go ahead because he would rather be called Kent. So, Kent, thank you so much for coming on. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing quite well, John. I just finished a book event. Vermilion Drift is out this week, and so I'm in Madison, Wisconsin. Just finished a book event at a wonderful bookstore called Book for Murder, and I'm out here on the lawn of the Capitol building, actually, for this interview.
Fabulous. I used to live in Minneapolis, so we've driven through Madison a couple times. Great city. And there was one time when we actually got stuck in a snowstorm, and it took us 9 hours to get from Minneapolis to Madison. I said, that's enough. We're spending the night here because I'm not going any further.
You got to be tough to live in this neck of the woods.
Yes, you do. And that's what you get when you live up there in the winter because you just never know what hits. So everybody, I'm going to go ahead. William Kent Krueger. It's William Kent Krueger, KRUEGER.com is where you can find out a lot of information about William here, or Kent, as you like to be called. So let's get in. So you're already on tour. You're touring right now with Vermilion Drift, and that's your latest book. So tell us a little bit about Vermilion Drift, and, you know, so everybody who might not have read, the Cork O'Connor series, how's it going?
Actually, it's doing quite well. Vermilion Drift is the 10th in the Cork O'Connor series. For those not familiar with what I do, I write a series that is set in the North Country of Minnesota, the North Woods, hard up against an area we call the Iron Range. My protagonist is a guy who is part Irish and part Ojibwe. So very often in my novels, I deal with issues that rise out of the interface of those two cultures, white and Ojibwe. I write very profoundly out of a sense of place. So what I hope readers will get when they come to one of my books is a sense of the beauty of northern Minnesota.
And for people who don't know, they call it the Iron Range because the ground is so hard in the winter, it feels like you're walking on iron because it's very cold up there.
John. Very nice.
Not really, but that's what we used to think from Minneapolis because you didn't see the grass for like 4 months out of the year, so we were called the Iron Range. But, you know, we actually plugged your book here before it actually came out on one of the shows because we read it, The Vermilion Drift, and we thought it was outstanding because we got an early advanced copy. And so, you know, you do have, you know, Cork O'Connor is definitely a different type of character. Like you just said, you know, his background. So give the readers a little bit of information of how did you come up with such, you know, a complex character like Cork O'Connor?
Well, I'm glad that you think he's complex. That's one of the things that I really like about him because I'm discovering things about him all the time with each book. I go a little bit deeper into who is this guy, Cork O'Connor. Cork actually was a character I had in mind long before I began to write my series. I had imagined a guy who was so resilient that no matter how far life pushed him down, he would always bob back to the surface, and his name would be Cork. When I made the decision to begin writing stories set in northern Minnesota and took a look at the demographics of northern Minnesota, what I realized was that there was a significant portion of the population who were, in fact, of mixed heritage, white and Ojibwe, and thought that would be just a terrific element to tap into for this series, that Ojibwe culture, in the same way that Tony Hillerman has, for so long and so successfully, used the Navajo culture. So I created a character who was had a foot in both cultures, white and Ojibwe, and who would, in who he was, mirror the conflict of those two cultures. Cork was at one time the sheriff of Tamarack County. He is no longer. He has a family, so he has a lot of family concerns. He's a guy who always is trying to do the right thing. He doesn't always know what that is, and he sometimes screws up, so he's got his faults. But he's the guy I think readers are always rooting for. At least that's what I hope.
And so the difference, so the first book that Cork was in was Iron Lake. And
that's correct.
So,
yes.
So from Iron Lake back up here to Vermilion Drift, he's definitely gone through, you know, I guess kind of a major shift in his life, who, you know, used to be the sheriff of Aurora, Minnesota, which is up in Tamarack County, to now no longer that happening. Now, when you were writing him in Iron Lake, did you imagine that now you're going to be on book 10 of this series?
When I was writing Iron Lake, I just hoped to God I was writing a book that was good enough somebody would actually publish the thing. If you told me then that I'd be on book 10 right now, I would not have believed you. But what I'm so pleased that I've written a character who has shoulders broad enough to carry 10 books. And to have readers who really enjoy coming to him book to book to book.
And you've gotten a couple awards here, especially I see, you know, Thunder Bay, you got some awards for that one, the Minnesota Book Award, Northeastern Book Award, the Lovely Award. So, you know, and I don't know if it was that book because, you know, that was a little bit later. But which book do you think that when you wrote that it was out and it started going, did you cement yourself and say, you know, wow, I've done it, and it just keeps going?
Actually, it was the first book.
It was actually on Iron Lake.
Iron Lake surprised the hell out of me. Iron Lake won the Anthony Award for Best First Novel, the Barry Award for Best First Novel, the Friends of the American Writers Prize, the Loft McKnight Fiction Award, the Minnesota Book Award. I actually went out of the starting blocks in pretty good shape. And all of the books then have been nominated for or won major awards. So at this point, I just am thrilled to be writing a series that, as far as I can tell in terms of reader response, continues to be strong and to please readers. But I guess the most important element is that it continues to excite me to be writing the Cork O'Connor books. And it's interesting that you mentioned Thunder Bay. It really did win a lot of awards as well. It's also my favorite in the series for a variety of reasons.
Well, that was going to kind of be my next question. If, let's say that someone's hearing you for the first time, would you say that Thunder Bay or Vermilion Drift, maybe? Let's take Vermilion Drift out of it since that's your latest. Which one would you go ahead and say, you know what, why don't you pick up this one first to kind of get the best understanding of maybe who you are as an author or maybe who Cork is as a character?
Do you know, Thunder Bay is not a bad one. A lot of people have come to it, to my series with that book, and then gone back. Thunder Bay is, I think, the seventh in the series, and then gone back and picked up the backlist and moved forward from there. But every writer in a series understands this. The sixth or seventh or eighth book may be the book that readers discover you with. And so you have to write a book that is completely satisfying between those two covers. And hopefully, although there's obviously history to the characters, hopefully that the readers will like what you've done in that book enough to go back and then buy the backlist and come all the way forward. My series, in terms of Cork's particular life situation, he's aged across 10 years. His children have aged across 10 years. His relationship with his wife has undergone 10 years of all the things that happen in a marriage. And so with the seventh or eighth or ninth book, you're going to see a lot of relationship there that you would better understand if you read the book the series in order.
So I have a question here from the chat room, and I want to go ahead and jump in because there's actually more than one. There's a lot of them on here. But one of your fans was on here and says, on your blog that you wrote on August the 6th, you spoke about audiobooks. And it says, I think an author can lend the best voice to his character. Do you ever consider reading your own work for audiobooks? And if not, why not?
You know, I actually auditioned. I asked Brilliance Audio, who does my
audiobooks. They made you audition for your own books?
Well, here's the story. I said, I would really love to try to read my own books because I do a pretty good job of the readings. And they said, sure, come on in. We'll give you a tryout. So I went to the studios in Grand Haven, Michigan, and they were very nice people. They set me down in the booth. I read for them a wonderful section of expository writing. And then they said, great. Now read dialogue. And then I understand, as a result of that, why you use professional people to do this. Because my children sounded like my adults, and my men sounded like my women. And, you know, I'm sure you've had this experience. When you listen to a really good reader reading a book, it enhances the experience tremendously, particularly when they're able to give individual voices to individual characters. I couldn't do that.
Well, now, did they ever think of, because there's a couple books out series that we've gotten that actually made like a production out of it where they've had maybe more than one, like five or six different people. Was that ever considered, maybe having like a production and maybe you would just be like a character?
You know, as far as I know, it was never considered, and I haven't yet listened to one of those audio books. But I would like to, just to see what it's like. Sounds like it would be like listening to a radio play or something, maybe.
So that was really something that, you know, never really was considered, but, you know, that's too bad.
As far as I know, yeah.
But I have another question. So, well, here, I want to go ahead and do this. How long is your book tour that you're doing?
Do you know, once a book is out, I'm usually on tour for about 8 to 12 weeks, essentially. I'm out.
Wow, that's pretty good time.
Well, I usually do anywhere from 40 to 60 book events in the 3 months following the release of a book. I really push it hard to try to get out to see everybody that I can. I get a lot of requests from stores, a lot of requests from libraries, and I try to do my best to accommodate them. Because I still think that's the best way to sell books, is face-to-face, hand-to-hand.
Now, another one of your fans wants to know, if you cut your teeth on short fiction, or did you go straight to writing your novels?
I did a lot of short story writing early on. I won a number of awards for the short stories. I think that's a great way to begin, because with a short story, you can focus on a single particular element of what would make a larger novel. You can focus simply on a character development or on creating an atmosphere. You can do an entire short story simply in dialogue. I think it's a great place to learn the foundation for everything that goes into creating a novel. So that's what I did. It took me a long time to translate that short story work into a longer work of fiction. I didn't publish Iron Lake until I was 48 years old. I think I won my first writing award when I was in my mid-20s. So there was a long transition period there.
Now, I do have to ask the question, because I was reading your bio here, and I kind of find this interesting. But in the spring of 1970, when you were at Stanford, you had something happen to you there at the university. Did you not?
that was certainly an interesting period in my life. I was actually kicked out of Stanford University for radical activities, which is something, in all honesty, I'm quite proud of. I think it's a whole lot more interesting to say I was kicked out of Stanford than that I graduated from Stanford. Do you want the story?
Well, yeah, because not everyone can say they were kicked out of Stanford. In fact, there's not a lot of people that even can say that they applied and got into Stanford. So, you know, so, yeah, I mean, because you said that you actually, you know, you already found the woman that you were going to marry, and she was in Nebraska. I don't know if she was with you in Stanford or not, or if you met someplace else. But, you know, yeah, just a little bit about, you know, kind of what happened, because I just kind of find it a little funny that, you know, you were kind of like, it didn't bug me that they kicked me out. Oh, well.
Well, this is the story. This was the spring of 1970. For anyone listening who remembers that eventful spring, it was the spring of Kent State, the shootings at Kent State. This was during the Vietnam conflict, and which was a situation that tore our nation apart for a very long time. So Kent State had occurred. There were the shootings in Greensboro, North Carolina, at the dormitories there, the burning of Attica Prison, so lots and lots of unrest in the air. Stanford University at that point in time had a financial relationship with an organization called the Stanford Research Institute. Their primary source of income was weapons research for the U.S. Army. There were a lot of us at Stanford who felt that was an inappropriate relationship for Stanford to have, and so we petitioned the trustees to end that relationship. They ignored us. We marched. They ignored us. And so finally, we took over the president's office. We took over the administration building. And the president was a very nice guy. He told the staff, let's leave. They left about 8 o'clock. A band came in, and we had a party, and we danced. The band left at midnight, and at 1 o'clock, the riot squad swept through and arrested a number of us. I was on a full scholarship to Stanford, and they yanked it. So,
and I take it you probably weren't the only one that they got, did they?
No, we were called the Stanford Seven. we weren't quite as famous as the Chicago Seven, for example, but there were seven of us.
And now you're infamous in Stanford history, and I bet you that they probably still tell stories about you, especially in the student body. I would have to think that probably still goes on.
Well, I doubt that. I have such an ancient history at this point, they probably don't even remember that.
Well,
I certainly
bad.
Do.
Well, you know, I'm telling you, I think, and, you know, everybody who goes to Stanford or whatnot, you know, this could have been, you know, Mr. William Kent Krueger, who we're talking to right now, better known as he likes to be called Kent, could have been one of your best alumni to come out of Stanford, and you blew it. You kicked them out just because they didn't like what you were doing. So that's a shame on you, Stanford. And I'm telling my daughter, who's applying to colleges. You're not going there now. Forget that.
I honestly don't think that's going to happen. But, you know, I'll go back to Stanford when they decide to give me an honorary degree.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, by that time, what's the difference? You've gotten so many book awards because your writing is fabulous and, you know, your characters. I wouldn't even go back there. I'd be like, I'll go back there if you make sure that you put all my books and they have to be on the English reading list for a minimum of 50 years. Then I'll go back and take your honorary degree.
Man, you're a guy who carries a grudge, I can tell that.
Hey, I'm telling you, you get to take people, you know, what the heck, why not? So, well, I know it might be a little too early to tell us, but, you know, but every author's doing it. So now that Vermilion Drift is out, what and when can we expect the next Corker Connor series, or are you going to go away from him and maybe do something a little different in the future? Have you thought about that?
Well, I have. I'm about halfway finished with the next book in the Corker Connor series, so that will be out next fall. In the meantime, I finished another manuscript that we're actually going to be approaching my publisher with in the next couple of weeks. That's not a Corker Connor novel, and I think it's a terrific book. So we'll see how they respond to that.
Is it still in the suspense thriller genre, though?
You know, there is a murder involved in it, but it's a book that has so many other important things going on it besides the murder that I would say it's in the genre, yes, because people are going to expect me to write a book in the genre. My own belief is that it's a much larger book than that. And it will be interesting to see. Do you know, when you write a series, readers are reluctant to follow you to a book that's not a part of the series. So it's going to be interesting to see if, in fact, I'm able and my publisher would be able to generate the kind of enthusiasm that I hope this book might save. Yeah.
So you're saying that this, because, you know, a couple authors have done that. You know, a lot of authors write under pen names, and I don't know if they're doing that as a test, because I've really not got a good explanation of, you know, why do you write under a pen name? Why don't you just write under your real name? I mean, what's the difference? And so I don't know, are you using this as a test to say, okay, is it Cork O'Connor that people are liking, or is it my writing that people are liking?
You know, I'll do it under my own name, and I think it's because my name at this point has some cachet associated with it. And I'm just doing it because sometimes a story comes to you and speaks to you, and you can't turn away from it. And that was certainly the case for this story. It came knocking at my door about 2.5 years ago, and although I knew it was a risky venture, I simply had no choice. I had to write this story. And who knows? You know, who knows what will happen to it? We'll have to see. I'm telling you things my publisher at this point doesn't even know.
Good. That's what I like. You hear that, everybody? The publisher doesn't know, but we know it here. And that's the important thing. Because, and for all the fans, just to let them know that you said you're halfway through the next Cork O'Connor series, but you really don't see an end in sight for him yet, correct? I mean, you haven't started thinking about when you're going to stop writing him.
No, you know, I think every author of a series, the longer you go on, the more concerned you are about becoming stale, losing your own interest in writing the character. And if that happens to you, certainly you're going to lose readers. That hasn't happened to me yet. I'm so excited about the book I'm writing now in the series, and it takes Cork's life in such an interesting direction that I'm just stoked to see what happens after this. So I don't see myself stepping back for quite a while.
Well, real quick here, last question. I'm going to try to get this one. Now, have you thought about taking one of your main secondary characters, maybe in the book, and spinning them off into their own?
I keep getting asked that about a particular character. A few books ago, I introduced a character named Dina Wilner, who was really a kick-ass PI, and she was in two of my books. And after that, I haven't used her. And readers continue to ask, will you bring her back, or will you do a spin-off series? Well, at this point, I have no plans for that. It's going to be Cork books all the way at this point.
So, well, and so that's another good thing, because I always think that if you're getting, you know, emails or mail and people are telling you, I love this character, or I hate that character, you've done your job, like I've said many times, because then, love or hate, that reader has gotten an emotional bond with the character that you wrote, and you've done your job. You've written, written it perfectly.
That's so true, John. I do think I've killed off characters that were significant in Cork's life. I've had readers write me really angry emails, "You bastard, what could you be thinking?" and I respond favorably to that because, exactly as you said, it means I've created characters that people come to really love. And so when they're gone, they grieve for them.
Well, everybody, I want to remind you that we're talking to William Kent Krueger. You can find him at William Kent Krueger, K-R-U-E-G-E-R, with his latest book, number 10 in the Cork O'Connor series called Vermilion Drift. You can go to his website, check them all out in order. He has a great thing that you can do, print off for a printable list, so you can take them all in if you don't have them, write to Barnes & Noble or Borders or Books A Million or wherever you go and say, "I want all these 10 in order." And I'm sure that they're almost, are they all available on ebook format too? And
absolutely.
Okay.
Ebook as audio is in every format that's available, they exist.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, Kent, thank you so much for coming on. We do want to make sure that, you know, we stay and bring you back when your next book comes on for Cork O'Connor, and, you know, stay on top of what that, you know, other book's going to be, you know, kind of leaving everybody in suspense about what that's going to be. So please keep us up to date, and thank you so much.
Well, thank you, John. I've enjoyed this tremendously.
All right. You have a great night.
You too.
So, everybody, so we're going to wrap up the show here pretty soon, and we've had two just outstanding guests on, Brett Battles at brettbattles.com, and we just were talking with William Kent Krueger, and he's at williamkentkrueger.com, K-R-U-E-G-E-R, to find out everything you want to do. So I want to remind everybody again that our next show coming up here, you can find out the updated list, because I've not updated it on the Blog Talk Radio site, is at suspensemagazine.com/suspenseradio.html, or just go to the main site and click on Suspense Radio, because Joshua Graham and Jennifer Lee Carroll are going to be coming up on Tuesday. But you're going to also see in September the list of characters. Yeah, I'm in character mode. The list of authors that we have coming up, which is Juan Gomez Arado, which is the author of The Moses Expedition, David Morrell, Karen Slaughter, Richard Deutsch, Tess Gerritsen, Lisa Black, Alan Jacobson, Lisa Unger. You want to talk about a star stud in September, we have it coming up. And like I said, we're going to have a major announcement. Hopefully we'll be able to share with you on one author. And then I just thought of another one that we're going to have another major announcement on two authors, if I can nail them down with a date and let you know. Because when you're talking major authors, I'm talking about as high up the food chain as you can get that's going to hopefully be on the show. I'm not going to tell you who until I get those nailed down. But check out suspensemagazine.com. It'll be in the magazine, in the electronic or print edition. We'll make that announcement. And then we're also going to put it on Suspense Radio. You'll be able to find it on Blog Talk Radio. HauntedComputer.com. You definitely want to go check out HauntedComputer.com, because that is Scott Nicholson, one of our contributors, doing his 90-day blog tour. We love that. So HauntedComputer.com, SuspenseMagazine.com. Find us on Facebook. Find us on Twitter. Keep up to date with everything we have going on. And, I think I'm out of breath. So, again, Tuesday night, we're going to have Joshua Graham and Jennifer Lee Carroll. It's Friday. It's time to go out and have a little fun. And it's time to enjoy yourself and enjoy some reading. So get off the chair. Go do it. See you all Tuesday night. Thank you.